Hello everyone and welcome to this podcast about the March 2020 meeting of the International Accounting Standards Board on the amendments to IFRS 17 project. My name is Chalani Mohatti and I'm a member of the technical staff. The March meeting was a little bit different from usual, with board members and staff participating via video conference. This podcast is also a little bit different, with Daryl Scott, a member of the board, joining me remotely. At the March 2020 meeting, the board completed its discussions of the matters raised by stakeholders when providing feedback on the amendments to IFRS 17, which were proposed in the exposure draft published in June last year. The final two topics the board discussed were the effective date of IFRS 17 and the extension of the exemption currently in place for some insurers regarding the application of IFRS 9. The board decided to defer the effective date of IFRS 17 and to extend the exemption from IFRS 9 by 2 years to 1st January 2023. Daryl, can you tell us about the board discussion about the effective date of IFRS 17 and the expiry date of the IFRS 9 optional exemption?
Thanks, Chalani. Yes, I think as usual on the insurance topics, we actually had quite an interesting conversation around the staff paper that had been produced. And I think it's worth actually splitting the discussion into two components, the IFRS 17 discussion and then separately the IFRS 9 discussion, because I think it's worth saying that the considerations were different. So focusing first on IFRS 17 and the change of the effective date, staff provided us with a paper that set out all of the reasons that we had been provided in comment letters, both justifying not changing the effective date beyond the 2022 date we had already proposed, and those in favor of moving the date to 2023. I think those who felt that we should not move the date further out felt that constituents, preparers particularly, had been given enough time to actually prepare for the standard. They were comfortable that the board's articulation and the exposure draft of why we were moving to 2022 was well reasoned, and they were comfortable with it. And many constituents had come back, particularly regulators and some users, had come back telling us that they felt that this standard was really necessary, and the sooner it came out, the better. On the other hand, the staff set out some of the reasons in the comment letters that we heard for extending the date further. And I think there were a couple of reasons that were raised in that particular respect. Firstly, a number of constituents pointed out that this is a very significant change for insurance entities. Some raised the concern around how smaller insurance entities were going to be able to deal with the change. There were some concerns raised around the implementation challenges specifically raised as a consequence of the amendments that we had been making, that we've been discussing over the last couple of months. And then a number of constituents raised the concern that because of the different pace of endorsement processes in different jurisdictions, there was a view that if we stuck with the 2022 date, we risked having different implementation dates in different jurisdictions. And those constituents put a lot of emphasis on the benefits of having a consistent IFRS 17 application date across the globe. I think the staff then looked at all of these reasons. They felt that the first reasons like the significance of the change, small insurers and implementation complexities, were things that the board had already considered when we either issued IFRS 17 in the first place or when we issued the exposure draft. And so they felt that those weren't bringing anything particularly new to the discussion. But the staff expressed the view that they had some sympathy for this idea of a global effective date, having the same effective date for everybody. And consequently, staff actually recommended that the board consider moving the date out to 2023. And the discussion around the board table was interesting. I think many on the board agreed with the conclusion the staff had reached. But I think the reasons why board members actually agreed with that were varied. I think some agreed very specifically and explicitly with the staff's rationale. Others placed more emphasis on some of the other factors. And for example, there was sympathy expressed for small insurers. There was sympathy expressed in some circumstances for the effect of amendments on the insurance industry. And I think it's probably fair to say that there were some who said around the table that there was no single reason that was sufficient to cause them to propose or to vote for a delay in date. But considering the package as a whole, they felt the accumulation of all the different things was sufficient to justify. So I think what happened in the end, the board voted not unanimously, with the view of extending the date to 2023. And so that's what will go into the final standard. But the reasons board members gave were slightly varied, and that'll be picked up in the discussion in the basis of conclusions. Turning now to IFRS 9, as I mentioned, the rationale was slightly different there. I think in the paper, the staff noted that little had really changed in the arguments that we had heard since we last discussed this issue. And that meant essentially there were two considerations that the board needed to consider. In the first, in favor, if you like, of moving the IFRS 9 date out further, was the idea that we were previously convinced and continue to perhaps be convinced that implementing IFRS 9 and IFRS 17 at the same time would be beneficial for the industry, and more importantly, that it would be detrimental for the industry to have two major changes to their financial statements within a very short period of time. And if we didn't change for IFRS 9, that would imply IFRS 9 changing in 2022 and IFRS 17 in 2023. On the reverse side, the staff argued that there has now been a significant delay since IFRS 9 first became effective for everyone else. And that has a number of complications that come through with two different standards in play and the like. I think it's fair to say the board found this argument a lot harder. And I think there was a number of debates going around the table. I think the strongest point for me in this discussion was the fact that IFRS 9 was designed directly in response to the financial crisis in 2008. It contains very specific changes to the way financial instruments are accounted for to accommodate the events or the learnings that we took out of that crisis. And it seems like if not now, then at some point in the near future, there's the possibility of another type of crisis emerging, and the responsiveness of IFRS 9 to these types of crisis events wouldn't be available for the industry. So this was a big part of the argument. But I think in the end, the board found it more compelling to say that we believed that having moved the date as far as we have, the extra year to align with IFRS 17 did make sense for board members. And so again, not a unanimous vote, but the board did vote in favor of aligning the two sets of dates.
Thank you, Darrell. At the March meeting, the board also provided the permission to begin the balloting process of the amendments. Darrell, can you tell us about the next steps of the project after the March board meeting?
Sure. Thanks. So as we mentioned in the podcast last month, in February, we completed the deliberation of the technical matters. So those are now done and out the way. At this meeting, as we've just discussed, we talked about what the effective date would be of the changes. The final request in the IFRS due process is for the staff to ask for the board to begin permission for balloting. Now, for those who are not familiar with our practices, what that essentially means is the staff is now asking for permission to go away and draft the revised standard, capturing all of the changes, all of the amendments that the board has agreed to in previous meetings. The staff does that drafting to prepare the standard to be ready for prime time, to be ready for application, and then provides us as board members with a draft that we can review, that we can pick up and see whether or not there is anything that we think doesn't appropriately reflect our decisions, or whether or not there are any unintended consequences of the way the staff have actually drafted the document. The staff will take that back, they will revise the draft, and they'll prepare what we refer to as a ballot draft. A ballot draft is then provided to the board members for us to vote on, and essentially people who've seen the balloting at the back, the number of board members who support a particular change, that balloting occurs in a formal environment where we're given a couple of weeks to actually read through the version and sign off on that version of the amendments to IFRS 17. And then that goes into our production process to be published externally. We expect that all of those processes are still likely to run on the original timetable that we anticipated. And so right now, as we look forward, we expect that we will still have the final amendments to IFRS 17 published as a pack or as a package before the end of June this year.
Darrell, thank you for this summary of the IFRS 17 discussion at the March 2020 meeting. Thank you all for listening.